Courtney and I working together, that would be great.
Actually, yeah, if I could address that, and so obviously in every state in the U.S., receives money from the Federal Communications Commission, and it happens to be that when this program was initiated, at the time, this was before the Department of Aging and Disability Services existed, and so what was then the Board of Education and Services for the Blind and the Bureau of Rehabilitation Services together and discussed which agency should assume, as it were, cognizance over the incoming money from the federal government. And, you know, a really amicable arrangement was reached where it seemed as though it was obvious to us with the Tech Act already up off the ground and running as a viable program, having the Bureau of Rehabilitation Services be responsible for administering access through technologies money in Connecticut. And again, those are federal funds designed to assist persons with deafblindness in accessing communications, as I understand it, both telecommunications and electronic communications, but I could certainly be corrected by Muriel, who's much more of an expert in this.
No, you are correct on
okay.
that.
And so from that time, we've worked together, and, you know, we've needed to work together because BESBE does maintain information on residents of Connecticut with legal blindness or severe visual impairment, and that's one of the obvious critical eligibility criteria for participating in access through technology. But then we work really well with our partner agency, the Bureau of Rehab Services, which is designed partly to assist persons with other disabilities than blindness, and therefore we really do need to work together and collaborate. And I'm very happy as I've watched Margie and Muriel together identify as a critical need in the community that that is being served, the persons with deafblindness, wanting to explain more what it is that BESBE can assist with and what it is that Bureau of Rehab Services, the Tech Act and Access Through Technology provides. And so, I mean, I know that I want to congratulate and recognize both Margie and Muriel for recognizing this as a need, identifying that there were a number of consumers being served who weren't sure when they had newly emergent need where to go to seek services. And, I am thrilled that you guys have started to reach out. I really do think it's important to try to do as much education as possible so that that all concerned understand, what needs each of these programs is designed to meet. I'm primarily responding to the notion that there's something improper in the way that that the programs are working together. And obviously, the federal authorities and the state agencies that contribute to this joint effort are well aware of the role that each plays. And we are subject to review through the state auditing process, and so far never has there been an audit finding that there's something improper about anything that we're in the way that we're administering these various programs. But obviously I would say that there's clearly a need to continue to do more outreach, and so I would encourage both, you know, Margie and Muriel to continue to identify pockets where there might be a lack of understanding about, you know, what needs are designed to be met by which program. And I'm available. Yeah, I don't know if anyone in the meeting has questions about that. I mean, I'm happy to take a moment to answer those or to defer to our new director, Carol, who obviously has experience in Nebraska, where similar funds were administered, and but I'm not sure under what arrangements. So maybe Carol could chime in with something illuminating from her experience. I don't know.
I just want to say really quickly, this is Muriel, that the funds are administered separately from Margie, what she can afford, what her programs provide, I should say. Mm-hmm. And she works with finance, and then my program, I'm responsible for what I spend and what I have to answer to. So we do keep everything separate there too. And I see Christine Telford has a question.
First, I'd like to make sure that Lisa doesn't have any more questions. Lisa, would you like an opportunity to make a comment?
Well, I did just have one question, and I felt like it was kind of an important one. First of all, thank you for clarifying all of that in regards to the federal and state differentiations and so on. So with that collaboration happening, I'm curious, like, I understand that your intent is to, you know, kind of have the communication access, but I'm wondering if the true intent of the reasoning of your partnership is to maybe reduce the spending on interpreters. Is that what I was understanding you saying, or can you clarify that part a little bit further?
Yes, I can. No, it's not for saving money on interpreters. It's just because of the ability of the availability of interpreters, and so that's why we're collaborating with the interpreters. We do both split the cost of the interpreters, but at times my particular program has paid for all of the interpreters. So it's not a matter of who's going to pay for what. We do have more money available to us in my program right now, and therefore we're able to pay for the interpreters where there is some lack of money coming from BSBE, so they're not able to. So, but still, by the two of us being together, it does make sense for us to utilize the interpreters that are available and not stretch that pool any further than we need to, as well as if we need tactile interpreters, there's very few in the state, and that's where we've run into a lot of problems trying to get interpreters to cover. So it's kind of a mutual thing all the way around, working with Source and Cosign and trying to get the availability of the interpreters. So it's not really for a cost effective.
Christine is still waiting to have
you clarifying on that. Thank you.
Christine speaking. Thank you for that detailed explanation, Muriel and Christopher. I also wanted to emphasize that this streamlines services and makes things quicker for deafblind individuals usually. In other states where you have Perkins or HKNC as the contract holders and using maybe a third party entity, the services are even slower because there's confidentiality issues. They're not allowed to talk to the state about what's going on. some of those third-party people know nothing about deafblindness. It's pretty bad across the nation. So I just want to put that out there. Usually, in my opinion, I have about 13 years experience working in the vocational rehabilitation fields, and I used to be a specialist out in Maryland. I would be the one referring to the I Can Connect program, and my clients would hear nothing for years. Like, it was crazy. So in my opinion, having your I Can Connect program linked with your state organization is probably the most streamlined way of doing anything. And it's a wonderful setup. Of course, there's always faux pas and things, mistakes happen, I'm sure. Everything can be improved. I don't really know too much. I'm kind of new in my role. I also wanted to suggest, has Connecticut ever considered sending a deaf-blind individual to get train-the-trainer experience so that you can have a direct deaf-blind individual providing the I Can Connect training, and you wouldn't even have to use interpreters then? And then you're also employing someone who's deaf-blind, and you're expanding your community resources, you're creating a professional in the field that you can utilize for other things. It's a win-win for everybody.
Right, and that hasn't happened yet, Lisa, here.
Christine Telford speaking one more time, and then I will let Margie go. I'm sorry. If you have anyone in mind that has good technical skills, I would highly recommend it. I've seen it be set up in multiple states, and it really, really helps.
Thank you, Christine. That's some information that I'll take back to my supervisor, but I know with our particular program, it's just her and I, and I'm only 20 hours a week, and it's for two programs. For those two programs, I do have other responsibilities, but I do have the time to do the applications we have. But it is something that I will suggest to my supervisor. I know we do have evaluators with New England Low Vision that are deafblind and do a lot of our deafblind consulting. So, but that's good information, and I will forward it on. Thank you.
I have Tyler here, your chair. I have a question. How many people do we serve? As I believe, I don't recall really having too many, maybe 10 or 12 people, and I'm ecstatic that you were able to reach more people because it's a wonderful program. I have certainly benefited. I couldn't live without my iPad. It's been a blessing.
That's a good question, Hannah. We average 10 to 15 possibly a year. Most of them are reoccurring consumers, and that's all well and good. We like that, but we also would like to reach those new ones. So that's why this year we were excited to add, you know, one more person to our program. And I do reach out to some that have received services in the past, like yourself. You've come back, you know, one other time. We've upgraded your equipment. You're probably ready for an upgrade too. But we do have a lot of reoccurring consumers, which is great, and we like to spend the money because we do like to not give the money back. We have $123,000 to spend this year. So far, we've spent about $40,000, so we have about $88,000 left, somewhere in that ballpark figure. And so we have only till June to spend the rest of that money. So that's why we're really pushing. That's why Margie and I are doing the outreach programs and everything. Matter of fact, today I was scheduled to go to New London for an outreach to the Southeast Connecticut Center for the Blind, and because of the snow, it was canceled. So, which is great because I get to see all of you. But it, and that one's rescheduled. So those are things on outreach that Margie and I are working on so we can get not only just the blind individuals, but the deaf-blind individuals, because though there are not a lot in Connecticut, we would still like to reach more than what we do. So that's an ongoing effort.
Margie Santos is still waiting to be heard. Yeah, so I just wanted to comment a little bit about the meetings that me and Muriel are having together. It actually works very well together because there was confusion with the person who had my position prior. So a lot of the that person had all of the applications go through them, and I think that's where a lot of the confusion was. So with us both being there in the meeting, if a question is asked of me for a particular service and it's not something that BESPE can do or has the funding to do, then I can just look to Muriel and say, you know, Muriel, can you speak about that? That's your program. And so in that meeting, they're seeing the difference between the two programs. If they're asking Muriel for something, she's like, oh, we don't do that. That's something BESPE does. And so we're able to go back and forth and talk together and then work together, that if something that we don't have, maybe Muriel's program has, or something Muriel's program has, doesn't have, she can refer to BESPE. So there is a good collaboration. And we do have a client that that was having a lot of difficulty serving, getting that person services, and with me and Muriel working together, we were able to get that person services, and it's working really good. Christine Tedford has her hand up. Sorry, I saw Lisa wanted to make a comment. I think her hand was up before me. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yes, thank you. This seems like a really great discussion. I think that with Muriel, I know that, you know, we have discussed the idea of, you know, recruiting or possibly finding deafblind individuals throughout the state, and that in 2022, and now we've entered 2023, that outreach continues to take place. I know there are clients such as myself and others who may already have technology that is outdated, maybe from 2017 and so on. So maybe, you know, kind of encouraging those individuals to be aware of the fact that the updated equipment is available. So if, and just to be sure on my end, is that allowable to reach out and say, my equipment is outdated, can we provide an upgraded device?
That's a great question, Lisa. Yes, you can. Usually we like to see you hold on to the equipment for 3 years. If by chance that something goes wrong with it, you need more training on it, once you receive the equipment, we can definitely work on getting it repaired, getting you updated training. That is all part of you receiving the device. If you want new devices, all you need to do is, I need the application, because we need to make sure that you haven't moved or anything, so I need an updated application, and I need proof of your income, because we need to make sure that you still meet the financial guidelines of the program. Once that happens, I can definitely send somebody out again to reevaluate you, see what they suggest for updated equipment, and we can move forward with giving you equipment again. The four individuals that Margie and I just worked with are returning consumers, and that's exactly what I did with them. I met with them. I had them sign the updated application, give me copies of their income. All four still qualify for the program, so I'm working on sending out evaluators to them. I know some of them have already given me ideas of what they're looking for in technology, and that helps our evaluator when they go out there to know that this is the information of the devices that they're looking for. If it is something that the program can provide, we will provide along with the training, just like any other time. Also, too, the older devices would need to be returned to the program. So if we replace anything, say you have an iPhone that has been given to you in the past from us, then we would need that iPhone returned to us once you receive the new one. I hope that answers your question. And Lisa, we're having 4 appointments in May, and I can reach out to you and send you the date, and you can pick the time for one of those, and we can meet individually. Margie and I can meet individually with you, and we can discuss things.
Okay, just one moment. That would be wonderful because my laptop does need an upgrade, but just one moment. All right, sounds good. I'll look forward to discussing that with you further. Thank you.
Carol Jenkins has her hands up.
Hello, this is Carol. Question, and I feel like I should probably know this answer, but I want to clarify. Are children eligible for this program as long as their parent or guardian meet the income requirements? Because I'm just asking because BESBE serves 60 children who are deafblind. And, you know, the school will provide stuff for school, but a lot of times they'll need other devices for home. And I was just curious about deafblind children.
Yes, absolutely. We would love to have them as applicants. We have 2 sisters that we've helped a couple of times with school, high school, and devices. They got new cochlear implants, and everything was Bluetooth. So, yes, we would absolutely welcome having children as long as their parents meet the financial guidelines. Yes. If there's no more questions for me, I'm all done.
I just had one point I wanted to make again, Chris Lassen, the Adult Services Supervisor at BESBE, and I'm happy to do some outreach with Mary Johns and Catherine Sum, and Margie and Muriel, to see if there are, you know, children's services clients who would benefit from participation, and so I'll make a note and take on that responsibility, and also encourage Lisa, if you have other questions about the approaches and the outreach activities, you should feel free to come to me about with those, any of those questions, to the extent that, you know, BESBE is part of that outreach. But I also want to recognize the success that Margie and Muriel had with that first scheduled day of 4 appointments, where they could really meet in depth with the clients who are benefiting from the Access Through Technology program. I was in the office, but alas, sort of jealously observing throughout the day the intense discussions, geared to meet the needs of our consumers. And I think it's a great approach that that you guys have come up with. And I'll, you know, hope that, you know, the rescheduled outreach at the Southeast Center for the Blind in New London works well, and I look forward to hearing about that later in one of our follow-up meetings for this.
Christine Telford has a question.
Christine speaking. My sign name is CT on the chin, just to make it easier. So I know that I mentioned providing maybe training someone who's deafblind to provide some of these services. And I totally understand that it's a small program, but what has happened traditionally in other states is the person becomes a contractor for the state. They're not a direct hire So the deafblind person would be a contractor, they'd be a rehab technologist in general for any of your departments. I've had them become Braille instructors too, and IL skills instructors too. So basically you're growing a professional in the field when you do things like that. So I really highly encourage it. That's all. I just wanted to put that out there again.
Hi, Christine. This is Muriel. Thank you. Actually, we do have one contractor in New England Low Vision that provides us with the deafblind individual that can do work with our consumers, as well as we do have on contract a deafblind individual who trains our clients on Braille. That we have definitely done train the trainer for. She works with our Braille individuals, teaching them the Focus 40, the Q Braille, Mantis Q. So we do have her on contract with us as well. So if that answers your question, I hope. And yeah, New England Low Vision definitely has those individuals that we've used in the past, and we are presently using our other contractor teaching two of our individuals Braille at this time. So, thank you.
Ms. Flaherty had a comment.
No, that's okay. I was gonna add in, chime in a little bit. I just want to say thank you so much for the explanation, and just a little piece to keep in the back of your mind. I'd like to see the deafblind individual or whoever low vision person who's very skilled with technology to be involved working with you and with these programs. And maybe that person could go out and do outreach and reach out to other deafblind people. And deafblind consumers, clients that you're working with, see the opportunity for employment or job participation in the program, and that can encourage them. So just my two cents.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay, this is Hannah Tyler, your chair. If there are no other comments or questions, we can move on. The next on the agenda is new business. Expenditure through December 31st, 2022. Would that be from Chris
Lassen? Sure. Thank you, Hannah. And first of all, apologies. We were working on getting updated financial information from our fiscal services folk in the Department of Aging and Disability Services. Their ranks shrunk by more than half with the retirements, and I had hoped to get out a summary in advance. I think Wayne Seidel had at one point indicated that would be a really good idea on an ongoing basis, so that we'd have more opportunity to examine the fiscal matters just in advance of our meeting. We did obtain a spreadsheet, which I've summarized. Due to some confidentiality issues, I wasn't able to just send it out in its in the form in which we received it sort of late-ish last week. But I do have a summary of current expenditures that I would like to provide. Out of the total allocation for this year through December, the beginning of December, we had received expenditures, incurred expenditures of $65,508, basically. And that was broken down into 59,750 for